Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of La Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. I'm Steve Hardy, joined as always by Derek Brissett. Derek, you were able to go along to the Arrows Academy game this weekend, held against the Atlantic Privateers.
And you weren't for
reasons
that you care not to share, but you know, rugby would be the most important thing to you. So I don't know what happened to you on the weekend.
Well, I have a fiance, so she's effectively the boss, so what she says goes. Either way,
That's not an excuse. I don't think listeners, don't let Stu get away with this. There's plenty of people that have fiancés, husbands, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, relationships of all kinds that still attend rugby games when
that is true, but sometimes you gotta make prior commitments and stick with them. If you know the expression "happy wife, happy life." I think everyone is aware of that.
Well, she's not your wife yet. You just call her fiance. So, like,
yeah, not yet, but you know, give it time. Anyway, you were at the game, and
I'm worried about making my girlfriend upset. So,
well, there you go. That's why she's girlfriend and not fiance.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah, she'd probably say no. Yeah, it's fair enough.
Anyway, so first of all, what was the grounds like? Because this was held at a private school, wasn't it?
Oh my god. The ground honestly is like the first thing I noticed. Now, so this game is on YouTube now, by the way. If you haven't had the chance to watch it and you would like to watch the Arrows Academy versus Atlantic Privateers game, it is on YouTube. It's on the Toronto Arrows TV. It's on the old, like, the official Toronto Arrows YouTube page has been revived for this game. So you can go check that out if you want, which I would recommend doing, like, support, you know, grassroots level, I guess, Canadian rugby. So, like, your question there about the ground, definitely like the first thing that I noticed. Now, I understand that Crescent School is a private school, with a private school, obviously there's a little bit more money, but I couldn't help but think to when I started playing rugby when I was in high school, and our field was probably 70 to 75 meters long. Which included the in-goal areas, by the way. The school board was very reluctant to allow us to actually play home games there. So you had the field that was nowhere near big enough. On one side of the field, you can get tackled into a portable that was comfortably like maybe a foot off of the touchline. So that was fun. Also not a whole lot of room for a hooker to operate with a line out. Very tight quarters there. If you kicked the ball, we literally had players that would run into the parking lot for like kicks at goal, because we had to like have a team of people that were in charge of deflecting the ball away from cars. When they would get kicked over, kicked it the other way, it were in danger of breaking a window on someone's house. All of this to say is that my high school rugby experience, not exactly a world-class facility on the field. So Crescent School kind of blew me away that in the last, I guess, 14 years since I was in high school, that this is now what high school kids are playing rugby on. It's a pretty gorgeous turf field. Everything about it looked like borderline professional. Is really what it is. It's it looked really like world class. They had like a huge, like fully like electronic scoreboard. During the game, you can see that in the background, too. It's kind of nuts. Actually, like walking up there and being like, damn, like this is a high school, man. And it's like it looks. It's. I'll put it this way: it's better than Lamport Stadium, where a professional rugby team actually did play. That field's nicer.
Was that a scoreboard able to put the word Toronto on its lettering, or could it
Oh,
only
yeah.
put Toronto?
It had, I believe it actually had arrows, and Atlantic were the words that were written on the scoreboard. It was
Okay.
arrows and Atlantic. But I don't think that had anything to do with like a letter restriction, like at Lamport. But like, yeah, no, absolutely. Like, it's, yeah, unreal field. It's, yeah, I can't believe that's what high school kids are playing at now. It's insane.
Oh, keep in mind, this is a private school.
Perhaps. Well, they
And
also
so,
had like, I know it's a private school, but they also had like posters for like their rugby team, like in the parking lot and like in
okay.
the thing. So I know like when we had Tim Matthews on last week, he did mention that part of the reason they chose Crescent School was because they were putting some money into like, you know, they've been putting some money into their rugby program. So support people supporting that are supporting rugby and pulling up there at like I'm assuming that school uses that field for other sports, but like, and the school actually kind of makes it feel like you're pulling up to like a proper like rugby stadium in a weird way, even though it's a high
Okay.
school. But yeah, yeah. So my thoughts on the venue are like, I can't believe that, because even when I was in high school, we played against private schools, and
Yeah.
they did not look like this. It's kind of
Well,
it's crazy. So it's high school rugby seems like it's been coming a long way in Canada in the last like 14 years anyways.
all right. Well, that's good. Well, let's talk about the game itself, because I was following along to your updates on Twitter as it was going along, and it seemed to start well for the Academy, and then the Privateers seemed to be taking full dominance of the game.
Yeah, it was, so honestly, like absolute dream start for the Arrows Academy. Right off of the opening kickoff. I can't remember who on Atlantic, but like the player on Atlantic, you know, caught the ball, was hit immediately. All the forwards were like immediately at the breakdown, and were able to get a penalty like 15 seconds into the game. So, like, you know, kick to the touch line, drive a maul, not quite over. I believe they needed another phase to actually get it done. But either way, or they need, sorry, not another phase. They pulled it out. They almost got there with the maul. They threw it to the backs, cross field kick, and Ben Russell, their winger, scored in the corner. So it was a nice play. And you know, it's like, that's a dream. It's a dream start, right? Like we're like, I don't even, like maybe a minute, like a real time minute, like came off the clock there. Like it was really quick. The Privateers, like, I don't want to say kind of look rattled or anything, but like they definitely, I don't know if they were expecting like that sort of like physicality right off the bat, from the Arrows. It kind of like, you know, they seemed like they were kind of, you know, not quite like, you know,
Yeah, definitely not how the script
yeah,
was
we've
supposed
heard
to go.
coaches talk about like, you know, starting on time and stuff, and it's like, it looked like, you know, the Arrows were definitely ready to go, came out guns blazing on that. It did obviously, it didn't really take long for the Privateers to answer. I think they would ultimately amounted to like 30 something unanswered points, right after, right? So like you had like the wingers on the Atlantic Privateers, Kyle Corrigan, Keith Graham, were really kind of the drivers of a lot of the drivers of their offense, like early on in the game. Both anytime either one of them touched the ball, they looked incredibly dangerous with ball in hand. Maybe helped a little bit, like one thing I think I would recommend people doing, the Arrows, the Rugby Academy. If you go to rugby, I believe you go to,
The rugby academy dot CA, I believe, is their website.
yeah, so rugbyacademy.ca. And if you kind of go to that website, there's actually a therugbyacademy.ca, that's what it is. But if you go to their website, there's like, you can join like their email list, and They actually emailed out like a pretty good update or like recap of the game with some stats and stuff. But like one of their takeaways was like the like posture going into tackles and stuff, like coming in too high, you know, where the, you know, arms, shoulders, everything is right. Was kind of like one of their points that's made in this email here. Right. And it's like the wingers on the Atlantic Privateers, especially were kind of able to take advantage of that, right? Shredding some tackles, moving their way up the field. And you know, they had some like a lot of the tries that Atlantic scored, they do have like the standard, you know, set piece maul tries and some drives off a scrum. Those are obviously there, but they did get a lot from just like, you know, running the ball and like cutting through the Arrows defense. Which is definitely something that, you know, the Arrows team that was at this game was just super young. I think they said their average age was like 20 or whatever.
That's something that I realized as well, is that like obviously the Arrows Academy.
Yeah.
And speaking to the guys last week, it's clear these guys are coming from like, you know, graduating high schools and in the middle of their like university tenure, or, you know, in their early 20s, whilst you have the guys in the Privateers, which is established more as a, at the moment, I'd say semi-professional high performance team. Emerging from Halifax. I mean, one of the guys that's, you know, doing absolute wonders for this team, from your reporting, was Jamin Hodgkins. And to put that into context is that he's currently studying at Cardiff Met University. And I don't know if he's been playing for rugby for Cardiff Met itself, which has been...
He's been playing
for Bridge End
over there. Yeah. He's been playing over there. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's been playing in Wales. He's been playing in a country that has a deep ingrained rugby culture. He's been able to play in the team. It was actually announced today that his short term contract has concluded with the end of the season. He played for, I think it was 6 months. And during that time, he scored 75 points. Yeah. So he's clearly doing fantastically well in a semi-professional environment already. And then he's coming over to the Atlantic Selects and making even more waves.
Atlantic Privateers.
Sorry. He's been coming over to the Atlantic Privateers and making waves over the here as well. So
making waves because Privateers boats. I see what you did there.
See? Witty repartee, that's what you get at La Rouge Rugby.
Yeah.
But then you realize that if that's the caliber of player that's playing for the Privateers, then that's the standard that has to emulate. And obviously it's the same thing of, you know, having any academy face a semi-professional outfit. It's that difference, that step up in, you know, time spent playing together, availability, physicality, those kind of things. So, you know, maybe from outside the perspective, this was what Jamie Cudmore was saying last week. It's not about winning. It's about doing the things that you need to do and doing them right. Now, obviously, you've mentioned that they've highlighted that the posture and tackling is something that needs looking at. But, you know, this was, for lack of a better term, like an exhibition game. You know, we've got the East Coast Rugby Championship coming up that officially starts, I believe, next week. And
was this not technically part of the East Coast Rugby Championship?
No, because the Privateers are part of the Eastern Conference of the East Coast Rugby Championship. Right. And the Arrows are in their conference with Rugby Quebec and the New England Independents.
Right.
So this is just an exhibition game, I believe.
Yeah, well, I think like, so, I mean, it's kind of a lot we can talk on from that point, that, or those points that you just made there. Like, I think like the Arrows are, so this was mostly players from, because the Western hub, The team, right? Are so that's was mostly those players, right? And there's also the Eastern Hub, and a lot of those guys were playing for their clubs because it was the start of the Marshall season, right? And as you know, the Marshall kind of usually kicks off with everybody playing like their big like local derby games. A lot of those guys were playing in those games for their respective clubs, right? So I think. There's another game this weekend against Greystones, so an Irish club, right? And so like it'd be interesting to see what that roster looks like and how that roster, you know, compares, because it'll probably be a lot of the Eastern guys getting their shot. Obviously they got that East versus West showdown that's coming up later before it ultimately winds down to the roster that's going to go to the Coast to Coast Cup. Yeah, so it's like they're going to be picking that team, but they're clearly still in like the like player selection phase of the Arrows are. And I think like that to me was kind of the biggest difference in this game, right? Like the Atlantic Privateers have like all their guys were older, they were bigger, they were stronger. It really shows in the set piece stats. The scrum was so much better. Or the scrum for the Privateers was way better. The Privateers were stealing lineouts left and right in this game as well, right? Yeah. So it's there was a lot of that going on. The physicality, I think the Privateers definitely brought a more physical presence, which, you know, knowing that the average age of the Arrows was 20 years old, is to be expected. Your other point, you kind of mentioned Jamin Hodgkins as well. That dude's fun to watch. He's got a nice little swagger to his game. You know, if he makes a nice play, he seems to be very inclined to let the other team know that he made a really nice play, which I'm sure the Arrows loved. But like, yeah, he's got that. He's kind of got like almost like an Owen Farrell-esque like kick. Build up, run up, I guess, or whatever you call that like little kick ritual that does. He's kind of got like a little Owen Farrell-esque, which I mean, as a Saracens fan, I was kind of digging. But yeah, man, he plays with a little bit of swagger. Is definitely a player to watch on the team. And I mean, like, you know, knowing that Canada needs fly halves, it's nice to see some Canadian fly halves playing well. The other side of the ball, though, like speaking of Canadian fly halves playing well, I thought like Tyrann Neville, I thought did a really, really great job. I mean, they had like, you know, maybe not as many like attacking opportunities as the Privateers based on just like, you know, how that game went. But he did kind of take advantage of it. He scored a try just by, you know, quick tapping a penalty, right? Just having like, you know, seems like he's got some like high game IQ, made some really nice plays. So I think like that was kind of, I think also a really positive thing for them too. And I mean, it's interesting because the Privateers obviously were able to run up the score a little bit. They did not start either half very well at all. Jack Morris got a try for the Arrows again within like maybe like 2 or 3 minutes of this second half beginning as well, right? So like they didn't start either half very well, but I think just they were able to obviously overcome those poor starts to the halves, but it'll be interesting like to see, because obviously the Arrows are the defending Coast to Coast Cup champions. Pretty decent Privateer side came into Toronto and, you know, steamrolled the Arrows Academy, who isn't quite done finalizing their roster for the Coast to Coast Cup. So it'd be interesting to kind of see how that does shape up when we get to the Coast to Coast.
Yes, Derek, as you mentioned, the Coast to Coast Cup is expanding. We're now having four teams for the 2024 edition, and they are the Atlantic Privateers, who are the hosts. We have the Arrows Academy as the defending champions. We have the Prairie Fire, who the Privateers mentioned a few weeks ago, they would be joining. Also, the Calgary Mavericks joining as well. You know, the Fire and the Mavericks, two brands from the former Rugby Canada Super League, coming back into competition again. Interesting enough, no team from BC this year, but that is just one of the things you have to do. I mean, Also, the Coast to Coast Cup is now sponsored by Admiral Insurance. I am loving these nautical themes for anything in Halifax at the moment.
I think that's just the city of Halifax. I think everything's nautical themed out there.
Hey, if it works, it works. I'm not complaining. But the format has changed as well. So instead of having three games with, you know, the Atlantic privateers, then the selects getting the benefit of having the most time between games, we're now doing two semi-final games and then the final and the bronze final, I guess. So on June the 19th, you have the Calgary Mavericks facing the Arrows Academy at 4:30 p.m. These are all Atlantic time. And then the Privateers hosting the Prairie Fire at 6:30 p.m. And that'll be held at the Admiral Club. And then on Saturday, June 22nd, the Cup moves to the Wanderers Ground. And they will have the final at 5 p.m. And it says that will be streamed live on the Rugby Network. And then the consolation match at 7:30 p.m. So it's very interesting that they're having the final before the bronze final, because normally it's the other way around. But, you know, I'm not the tournament organizer. I don't know what commitments they have to give. It says it's streamed live on the Rugby Network, so it may be because of like streaming issues or booked time or whatever, they have to have the final on first, or it could just be a scheduling error and they actually meant to say bronze final at 5 and championship final at 7:30. But at least we know that one of these games is going to be streamed live on the Rugby Network.
It's right. I'm assuming it's right.
I'm assuming it's right as well. It's just it's just different.
Yeah, it's a little unusual to do it first, but I think I think as you said, or we talked about this before coming on the show. There is an MLR game that conflicts with that 7:30 time slot.
That is true.
And I know you did mention that it's on FS2, but that would only be in the States. So if it's in Canada, it's here. So maybe they're trying to. It's on the Rugby Network. So I mean, I don't know, maybe they're trying to avoid a scheduling conflict with an MLR game with the final, right?
Yeah, and it is NOLA versus Canada South, I mean New England, so they're getting that Canadian representation.
That's also an interesting point though too, so New England is playing, because like the East Coast of Canada, I think I don't really know who the rugby fans out there are cheering for. But like my experience with the East Coast of Canada is there's a lot of people out there that do cheer for like the Boston area sports teams as well, because they are physically close to Boston.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, you know, in the NFL, obviously you would have like the Patriots. Some people might cheer for the Red Sox. People that you don't like cheer for the Bruins. But despite the fact that they are from Halifax and are all, or not from Halifax, despite the fact that they're from the East Coast and everybody from the East Coast is awesome. But sometimes some of them have flaws, like cheering for the Montreal Canadiens or Boston Bruins. But it's so like maybe. You know, just pure speculation, but maybe there's something to that people would want to watch a Free Jacks game.
Yeah.
Right. But like, I don't know.
It's actually something that's just crossed my mind, because we mentioned that the Privateers are, you know, seem to be a much more physically dominant, higher skilled team than the Academy team that they played this weekend. But this, the Coast to Coast Cup is taking place between apparently June 19th and June 22nd.
Yeah.
But the first of men of the Canadian men's test matches is on July the 6th. So maybe that some of the guys like Jamin Hodgkins get picked up by Rugby Canada to be in that expanded training squad before the international test. So it could be that when the Privateers host in the Coast to Coast Cup, maybe they're not as at full strength as they were, say, for this game.
I mean, I think that's a good point. I mean, like if like, I don't know what it would actually be, like 95% maybe more.
Yeah, the 90-95%.
Yeah, these players are going to be are all going to be Canadian, or Canadian eligible, right? So like, I think obviously like, I'm assuming like, you know, it'd be good for Rugby Canada to keep an eye on these tournaments. It'll be good for even if it's not like the national team, like, you know, under 20s, under 23 or whatever, but like, you know, like it'll be good for Rugby Canada to keep an eye on these tournaments. It's probably going to be good for MLR teams to keep an eye on these tournaments as well, right? Because it's you do have guys that are going to school right now and therefore could be, you know, eligible for the college draft, right? So that's something to kind of keep an eye on with all these tournaments popping up with this, you know, this tournament, East Coast Rugby Championship, the Vancouver Highlanders and their Rugby Players Challenge and all that, right? Like those are tournaments that I think like, you know, MLR scouts will probably want to be keeping an eye on too. And similarly, like the, you know, Rugby Canada, I'm sure is keeping an eye on them because I think that's ultimately kind of what you want, right? Is we want players that have an interest in playing at an elite level of rugby, getting more games, right? And this is what, you know, the Coast to Coast Cup, the East Coast Rugby Championship, games such as the Arrows Academy versus Atlantic Privateers, or, you know, any of these other games that the Arrows are playing, like against Greystones next week, right? Mm-hmm. These types of games help get guys more game time, more experience, right? Allows them to build up their skills, their just their rugby IQ and all that, right?
Yeah.
So like we need that to be happening. But the big benefit of that is if we're playing these games, it's like it would be good to have obviously MLR teams, Rugby Canada's national teams, like keeping an eye on these players because it's another chance to kind of view who the upcoming like generation of players are, right? Or who is like out there and available.
Yeah, absolutely. You may had Tim Matthews talking about like how you keep an eye out for Canadian eligible talent. I mean, I don't know how the draft is, if it's going to change in the future, but I mean, Canadian players or Canadian eligible players have already put their name forward for the draft list. So, you know, this is definitely an option that they can use and the MLR teams can also use to acquire further talent, emerging talent in North America. But, you know, it's only like a few weeks away now and, you know, definitely great to watch. I'm hoping that all the games are on the Rugby Network, but at least if the final, at least I'm fine with that. Anyway, let's move from emerging talent on the Northern Hemisphere to fantastic talent in the Southern Hemisphere, because it's been a thunder down under as Rugby Canada have taken on the Wallaroos in the next round of the Pacific Four Series. The final score, Australia 14, Canada 33. You know, similar to the game against the USA, it was 7-19 to Canada at halftime. And something I actually found out that Australia have never beaten Canada in women's 15s, but this was the highest score Australia have ever made against Canada. Their previous highest was 12. But
I don't know why I'm so like, that feels very surprising.
I think as well, it's like we're kind of a bit spoiled at the moment because, you know, we have this competition where Canada is facing, you know, three of the best teams in the world on an annual basis. Yeah. But, you know, before 2022, Canada had only faced Australia three times. And I think one was at the 2017 Women's World Cup. And then two other times where I think were like World Cup warm-up games. So, you know, it's hard to... It's understandable of like, but yeah, it's a weird statistic to speak of.
That's great though.
I know. No complaints from here. You know, we had five tries with three try scorers, Sarah Klein and McKinley Hunt picking up two apiece with Dalika Menon getting beautiful try between the posts just from tapping the ball and going. Sophie DeGoody getting 4 out of 5 conversions as well. I think the only downside was the yellow card that resulted in a penalty try. But testament to how good Sophie DeGoody is that when the ref was trying to explain that no player could get across the field in time to be able to have hypothetically stopped Australia from scoring a try, Sophie DeGoody was like, I could have made that.
Yeah, I know, exactly. It's I did kind of love that. Well, yeah, she's the best player in the world. She could have done that. It is honestly, when you do kind of word it like that, though, it is honestly a weird rule to be like, you guys, nobody would have got that. It's kind of weird because it's like, it doesn't, you know, the attacking player could have dropped the ball. There's a lot that could theoretically happen on a penalty try. Or like, it's a penalty try. I fully believe Sophie DeGoody would have stopped that. For one, I think Canada was absolutely robbed on this call.
And as a result of this victory, Canada now leapfrog France to third in the world rankings, putting them behind just England and New Zealand.
They all qualify for the tournament that they're hosting, which I still don't understand.
So, see, this is the problem. You have one team that Canada have never lost to, and then you have another team that Canada have never beaten. But, you know, I think it's one of the things that, you know, as time progresses, as these teams get more time playing against each other, eventually one of those statistics is going to fall. And, you know, regardless of where you stand on it, it's going to be better for rugby as a whole as a result. But yeah, this game, you know, obviously the difficulty of this game and the match against New Zealand in the early hours of May 19th is it's in the early hours. So you either dose up on the caffeine beforehand or you just call it an early night and get the result in the morning. I do appreciate TSN doing a full match replay on TSN1. Next day for the Australia-Canada game. I thought that was pretty cool.
It did that for the USA game too. They had a full match replay at a different time slot during that on that weekend as well. So it's, even though that game kicked off at a normal time, they still did it. So it's nice that TSN is, you know, still putting these games on, like, on air, like at a reasonable time through replays and stuff too. It shows a little bit of a commitment to women's rugby and you know, the importance of putting them on like a high stage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that needs to be mentioned is that Squidge Rugby put out a tweet saying that, you know, because Sophie DeGoody is what the best player in the world, we forget just how talented this team is. To which our response is, who's we? We've known how great this team is. Sophie DeGoody there or absent. You know, we've seen like the fantastic talent that's on display in this women's team. We've been reporting on it all the time. And, you know, it is, I mean, obviously having the best player in the world is great, but you know, one player doesn't make a team. We've had you know, congrats to Alex Tessier on getting her 50th cap, and you know, we're hoping that we can announce the new highest cap women's Canadian player of all time when the New Zealand game comes around. But you know, we're not gonna jinx it just yet, so we'll leave that there. But again, congratulations to the women's team. Congratulations on securing a qualification for WXV1 that you're also hosting. That would have been very embarrassing otherwise. The most Canadian rugby thing to have happened. We've got a tournament. We're not taking part in it. But as I mentioned, the game against the Black Ferns will be held in the early hours on May 19th. Full details to be released, but likely a replay on TSN. Now let's move on to the men's under 20s because, you know, they've got their global competition coming up, or the qualifier for it with the World Rugby Trophy. 36 players have been invited to a 4-week training camp. And that is in preparation for the World Rugby Trophy qualifiers between Canada and the United States. Games will take place on June the 1st and June the 6th, with the aggregate winner going on to the World Rugby Trophy to be held in Scotland. You know, but unlike last year, where both games were held in the United States, this time round, both games are being held in Canada. You know, 36 players, a 4 weeks high intensity training camp. Yeah, I think it's going to be a very interesting game. It's the first opportunity for Christian Esterhuizen to lead the U20s in a global competition. I think the game on June the 6th is at Starlight Stadium. And yeah, you know, obviously last year failing to qualify, and that really put like a dampener, but you know, absolutely hoping to see the emerging talent, a lot of guys from like the Pacific Pride taking part in this as well. And yeah, I think this is going to be a great opportunity for guys to step up and, you know, hopefully qualify and make that tournament in Scotland.
Yeah, man, it's you know, like I mean, I think it all kind of ties into everything we were talking about earlier. Like it's great to see the younger players getting more and more opportunities and stuff. And, you know, the men's U20, like the World Rugby Trophy qualifiers, is another another chance for, you know, to get some experience at an elite level, right? And it's, you know, it's all good things happening. And, you know, seems like it's all good things kind of happening for, you know, developing Canadian rugby players right now.
Yeah. And now on to an initiative proposed in conjunction with the senior men's 15s, is that for every adult ticket bought for one of these game, for the game against Scotland and I believe the game against Romania, a free child's ticket is included as well for every child in Ottawa. This is, of course, to get more kids involved in the game itself. And, you know, they had a similar initiative last year for the Pacific Four series when that was hosted in Ottawa. I think this is fantastic. You know, anything that can get more kids to the games to see Canadian representation on the global stage. Admittedly, this is up against Scotland. This is a team that is severely
they're pretty
gonna outmatch Canada. Yeah, they're pretty good. They did pretty well in the...
So what do they got on there? Some dude named Finn. A inferior, like, Kirkland version of Vandermeer.
Yeah.
And that's about it, right?
Yeah, I mean...
It's nobody...
No one big, no one special. I mean, you know, what did Finn Russell do? Just play in France for a couple of weeks and then went to Bath and... Who's good that plays for Bath, really? Come on. I mean,
no one.
Well, we'll see. You know, obviously, we don't know who's actually in the squad as of yet, but well, hopefully that those decisions can be made. And yeah, if you're in the Ottawa area and you want to go along to these games and you want your kids to come along, well, good news. They'll be able to come along for free now. Yeah, you know, a perfect Saturday, I think, in my book.
Yeah.
I like and,
I'm not a kid anymore, but kid at heart. Can kid at heart get free tickets?
I don't know. Well, I think we should look into it. And define Ottawa region. By Ottawa, do they mean slightly west of Ottawa all the way to the Golden Horseshoe? Would that be possible? You know, they need to iron out these details and we'll find out for sure. Anyway, let us move from Ottawa to another capital, Madrid. Because the final round of the sevens happened, and that means that the big grand final will be taking place in Madrid at the end of this month. So the results from the Singapore sevens is that the men finished 12th again, and the women finished 7th. As a result, the men, we kind of knew already, are in the relegation pool, and the women will be in the championship pools. It was announced last week that the women will be in Pool A of the championship pools, and they will be facing I say facing. The structure of the competition hasn't really been announced for the championship pool yet. All we know is that their pool consists of themselves, the USA, New Zealand, and Great Britain. The men's pool cannot be announced as of yet because the Challenger Series hasn't finished. That will be concluding this weekend. And Derek, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the Challenger Series at all, but and the big drama is with Hong Kong and Germany. So in the first round, Hong Kong didn't do that well. I think they finished like 10th or 9th, really low down. And Germany finished in, I think it was like 3rd or 4th. Yeah. And then in the second round in Montevideo, it was a complete reversal of fixtures. Hong Kong finished high up. I think they finished 2nd, and Germany finished like 11th or 11th or 10th. And as a result, they are now both on the same points, but Hong Kong are ahead, I think, on like try difference. It's, you know, really, let me get the actual numbers up. Yeah. In the first round, Hong Kong finished 7th, Germany finished 4th. And then in the second round, Hong Kong finished runners up whilst Germany finished with 12 points. So they are both on 26 points at the moment, but Hong Kong just ahead. I guess it must be because they have higher overall finishing with that second place finish against Uruguay in Montevideo. But the final round is taking place in Munich, and at the moment it is wide open. Uruguay, Kenya, Chile. Uruguay and Kenya on 36 points, Chile on 32, and then we have Hong Kong and Germany on 26. And then, you know, eking out with the potential to get in are Tonga and Japan. Tonga on 18, Japan on 15. And we have Uganda on 14. I think Georgia is on 10. Unless something goes really wrong, I think Uganda and Georgia are just out of it. I think Japan, who is currently in 7th, may have an option, you know, if they finish high enough. But they finished, I think, 6th in the first round, and they finished 10th in Montevideo. So it's not looking too good for them. But yeah, definitely the big drama is going to be between Hong Kong and Germany, who are currently on the same points. And it's just going to be who finishes higher out of those two.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it sounds, I mean, I like the relegation pool. I think it's like, no matter who gets there, it's going to be like, that's going to be wild. It's probably going to be more entertaining than the actual finals. Relegation games are intense.
If anything for last year has told me, when Canada and Kenya were in that relegation game after Kenya beat Canada earlier in that final tournament, and then you have that game, and it's just like Kenya just trying at the last second just to interrupt play, but Canada just able to kick it out and secure their place for this year's competition.
And let's not forget, too, Kenya beat the Blitzbox this year.
That is absolutely true. It's going
to
be...
The next tournament that Canada's the men's team has to go to is the Olympic repêchage. So they got to defend their spot in the World Series and then go and try to win a spot in the Olympics. So it's gonna be tough
against the wall, to say the least.
Yeah.
All right, and now we'll bring it back to Canada, back to BC and Vancouver with the Vancouver Highlanders. They've had new additions to their squad and their reserve squad. On the reserves, they have signed George Wallin and Asfan Saeed. And in the main squad, they have Shaba Shibudze from Georgia and Relmu Wilson-Valdez. And I believe that now takes the Vancouver Highlanders to their 25 players for their squad. However, with Paul Cellini having to drop out, I don't know if they'll add another player, if they'll move someone from the reserve squad. But you can keep up to date with them on the Vancouver Highlanders social media pages, both on Twitter and Instagram. And if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out more, as well as our written pieces at therougerugby.ca. You can also find our podcast on Spotify, S4P, and Apple Podcasts. We have our YouTube channel, at The Rouge Rugby. Make sure to hit the bell notification and stay up to date with all our videos. We're also available across social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, all at The Rouge Rugby. Derek, where can people find you on social media?
At Persetha Jed across all social media networks.
And you can find me across social media at Hardman, spelled H4RDMAN. Well, that's where we're going to end this episode. Derek, thank you for joining me. And thank you all for joining us for another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. We hope you can join us again next time.